Okay, so let's talk a little bit about homework 4, which is going out today. I know you guys have done 2 assignments, program and CUDA, but in homework 4 and homework 5, we're going to write some GLSL code. And there's 2 things. One is a vertex shader, one is a fragment shader. For the vertex shader part, you can do this in either OpenGL and C++ or WebGL and JavaScript. You're mostly writing shader code. You're going to write a couple of lines of either C++ or JavaScript. So use either. I mean, if you want to try WebGL and like you're afraid that you don't know JavaScript, you have to write such little JavaScript code that you could probably just jump in and do it. And the shaders are exactly the same. So choice is yours. For the vertex shader part, we're going to do a vertex wave where here's the input you're going to get. You get a 2D grid in the XY plane. The height here, Z, is all 0. And then you're going to modify this shader. Let me jump up. To look like this. Now here, we're just using cosine and sine to perturb the Z value, and we animate it over time. So we keep updating the time uniform, and we keep putting it into the vertex shader, and then we just keep perturbing the height. It's pretty simple. What do you see? It's like it looks pretty cool, and it's barely any code. And then you also see that the color, see how it's kind of bluish at the top and reddish at the bottom? So the other thing that you're going to do is you're going to assign a color based on the height, and then you'll pass that into the fragment shader through a varying. If you write more than 15 lines of code for this entire part, you're writing too much code. Okay, then the part 2 is a globe shader, which will all be done in a fragment shader. You don't have to write any C++ code. I only have a C++ implementation for you, though. There's no JavaScript, so I'm not that fast. So everyone has Visual Studio installed, right, I hope? Or if not, hopefully you have it in the lab or something. That's a good point, actually. One thing that you might want to consider installing is called EndShader. And EndShader, so for example, here's the EndShader is syntax highlighting. So here is the fragment shader, and you'll see, and I'll explain the details, but you have a bunch of uniforms coming in, and they're different textures. And then here I'm just giving you diffuse and specular lighting. But you see how there's syntax highlighting here for the GLSL? That's just a plugin called EndShader, and I have a link to it in the write-up for the homework, but I recommend installing it, and it'll make running GLSL a lot easier. Yep.
Just out of curiosity, do you have any similar plugin
for CUDA? I don't know, but there's got to be one. I imagine that there is one. If you quickly Google, I'm sure you'll find something. Okay, so the globe assignment, here's what you get. You get this globe to start with. Everyone sees this specular highlight right here, right? And as I go over the land, the specular is still there as of right now. Now, look, on the dark side of this globe, right, it's completely black over there. And you can use the mouse to zoom around and also to zoom in and out. And you can also hit the plus and minus buttons just to make it spin if you want to do that. Okay, so what you guys are going to do is you're going to take this base globe, you're going to take the fragment shader, and let me go to the answers and I'll show you what it looks like. And we're going to add a variety of effects to this thing. The first is on that night side, on that dark side, we're going to put in night lights. So, you know, there's satellites up there that are doing imagery, and some of the satellites take imagery at nighttime. So you really can see how you guys see the night lights? Oh, it's pretty dark for you, but I promise that we have imagery that shows night lights, and it shows, like, road networks. It shows where the cities are. So it's pretty cool to show that in the night part of the globe. And you should be able to use the diffuse lighting component to figure out what's day and what's night. The next thing is the specular highlight. See how you see it right there in the ocean? but you don't see it on the land, because the land is really a diffuse surface. It's not really reflective, whereas the ocean is. So you see, what we're going to do is I have a specular map, and you're going to basically only do this specular computation in the ocean, not in the land. And then you'll see that we have clouds here, so we have data that tells us what color the cloud is, and we have a cloud map, just like a specular map that says where is a cloud, where isn't. We'll diffusely light the clouds. And then on the dark side, the clouds, they're not lit, but they cover up the city lights. And then finally, if you guys see the mountains right along there, maybe if I zoom in a little bit, you can see it better. We're going to do bump mapping. Oh, sorry. You're going to add a bump map so that we change the surface normal to make it look like there's actual geometry there for the mountains. The clouds should animate, and I don't know why they're not animating. I think I had that commented out to take some screenshots. But what you're going to do is when you read from the clouds is you're going to offset the texture coordinate, the S value of the texture coordinate by a certain time step, and the clouds will spin around. They won't swirl. It's literally just they just shift. Now, extra credit, I am offering extra credit on this, and up to 10%. The choice is yours. You can do whatever you want to do. I think cool things to do would be use Perlin noise to do some water. You know, because you have the specular map. You know where water is. You know where land is. You could use Perlin noise to simulate some water flow. You could do one thing that's fairly easy to do is you could add shadows to the clouds, where when you're rendering a fragment, you can cast a ray to the sun and look through the cloud map to see if you're in shadow from the clouds. I mean, the sky's the limit. Do whatever you guys want to do, extra credit-wise. Pun not intended, but now next time it will be intended. And this is great for your demo reel if you're in DMD. I think that you could do some really cool stuff here. And this is also a good assignment because it brings together a lot of the shading effects that we'll talk about on Wednesday. So this is a really cool assignment. Again, this code, it's not that much. It's 30 lines. A fragment shader is not very big. So again, if you find yourself writing a ton of code, you're not doing it right. So have fun. This is going to be really cool. Any questions on homework 4? Yep.
Does the hardware still require NVIDIA? Can we run on ATI or Intel?
So it should run on ATI. In fact, a few years ago, I would laugh and I would say, no, it probably won't run on ATI. But ATI drivers are really good now, and it will, and it should run on them, no problem. In fact, I have a similar globe for a project. Oh, I'm going to show you guys some demos today. That reminds me. I have a similar globe for what I do at work, and I develop on AMD hardware. You can try. Theoretically, it will work, but I don't know.
Okay.
Make sure to update your OpenGL drivers before you guys do this. I mean, these are pretty cookie cutter shaders, and they should work on most hardware and most drivers. But just make sure to update your drivers. And laptop drivers are notoriously bad in that they're usually older than depending on the manufacturer of your laptop, they kind of lock down how often you can update your drivers. But I would try to go, even with a laptop, I'd try to go right to NVIDIA or whoever to get the latest drivers. Other questions? Oh, just a note, now that we're on the AMD topic. Yeah, so AMD, their OpenGL drivers are like notoriously not particularly stable, had a lot of bugs, but they rewrote them a few years ago, and I'm not sure how many years at this point. And now they're good, like it's really good. And in fact, there used to be a time when we would go, man, you know, this works on NVIDIA, but doesn't work on AMD, or doesn't work on ATI. And a lot of times what that is it's actually our fault, it's the programmer's fault, in that NVIDIA will let you get away with some things, like your shader might compile even though it's not up to the spec. I've had this happen to me where I've written code on NVIDIA, and I got a warning, but not an error. And of course, I ignored the warning. I don't even know if I saw it. And then it didn't work on AMD. The shader didn't even compile on AMD. So you got to be careful there. So that's not AMD's fault. That's my fault, right? So now that's why I develop on AMD hardware, because I know if it runs on AMD, it's going to run on NVIDIA. So other questions about doing the GLSO? And you guys got 2 weeks, which should be plenty of time. Okay, so yeah, I forgot all about these demos, but let me show you guys some demos. So on Friday, I went down to Orlando to demo some stuff that I've been working on at WebGL Camp Orlando, which is like a small WebGL conference. And I haven't ran this in a while, so it'll probably take a second to load. But all the work that I've been doing, and this is outside of Penn, this is at my regular job, is with JavaScript and WebGL, and we do a lot of globe visualization, a lot of satellite visualization. Like, you know, there's a bunch of satellites in orbit. Where are they? Where are they going? What can they see? Hey, this globe looks familiar, doesn't it? And then, you know, if there's aircraft, you know, where are the aircraft? Let's track those, ships, ground vehicles, all that kind of stuff. So this globe should look surprisingly similar to your homework. You will see that this one does have shadows for the clouds. Though the mouse seems to be frozen at the moment. Okay. So here, and I know the red is dark, but you're looking at like a little less than 1,000, 800 and some satellites. And these are the real satellites that are up there right now. This doesn't account for everything because there's classified satellites that I don't have access to here or just in general. And there's also space debris where like two satellites can collide and create a bunch of junk. And there's like, so really, although I'm only showing 800 and some satellites, like people are tracking over like 100,000 things in orbit out in space. And these are the real ones that are out there. Like this isn't made up data, this is current data. The only thing is we're running it at 15 times real, 15x performance, or 15x time. So they're not going quite this fast, but we can get down and then look up. This atmosphere here is based on GPU Gems 2, Sean O'Neill's work. I don't know if anyone has seen it. And this is all in a web browser. I didn't install this or anything like that. This is all hardware accelerated running WebGL and various shaders. Something else that I think is really cool that we've been doing. Let me go over here. This initially started as a joke at my work. For years, they were asking us to do this one particular feature, and we finally got around to doing it. Okay, so here, again, we see a globe, and I got two satellites orbiting the globe, and we're drawing their orbits as well. Now, we can do it in 2D. Whoa. Let me refresh that and throw that off the page. So the same API that we use to do the 3D also does 2D. Now my web server is slow. And then the cool thing here is we're also streaming the imagery. So a lot of this code in 3D and 2D is like exactly the same. So it's, you know, streaming in the high resolution imagery just like you would in Google Maps or anything like that. But then we also did this 2.5D that we call Columbus View. So here you see like the satellites, you know, almost looks like roller coaster tracks. And we joked about doing this for years. I mean, I don't know, 5 years, you know, people are like, oh, let's do it. And then finally, like 6 months ago, we finally did it. What is the point of it? Well, some views are, it's easier to see some things. Like it's really easy to figure out satellite altitude here as opposed to in 3D. However, it's not entirely... You got to really be careful when you look at this, because when you look at this, a satellite can see the entire map, when in reality, the Earth, you know, is an ellipsoid, so it can really only see a subset of it. So the questions of visibility need to be carefully looked at here.
A cone?
Right, exactly, yes, yeah. That's exactly right. And then we can morph these... Sorry, let's go back. Where's my shift key? So you can morph it from 3D to 2D. You know, you can go in both directions. And there's nothing magical about what I did here. Like, this is cookie cutter code that that you guys can either do already or will be able to do a week from now. But the effect, man, people go crazy when they see this. You're like, oh man, that morph is so cool. But that's not like a physically based morph. That's just, I mean, that's a linear interpolation. The hardest part here is that you're in two different coordinate systems. But that's still not very hard. So, okay. I have a bunch more demos I could show you guys, but we should do maybe some material today. What do you guys think? Any questions about those demos? Again, that's all WebGL. All right, so let's talk about GLSL for about 10 minutes before we do the student presentations. So I want to go through some syntax stuff here, and this will be really important for writing your Vertex Wave and your globe shaders. So I say GLSL, it's a lot like C, it's kind of like CUDA C. It has a preprocessor, you know, just like you're used to in C. My favorite feature of the preprocessor is pound line, where you can say what line number that is. And this way, if you're concatenating multiple strings for your shader, you can kind of reset the line numbers, which is good for, I might have one set of shaders that's just functions that I want to use, and another that's actual implementation, that's actual main function. And I can use pound line so that when I concatenate these into one big shader, that I know what the line numbers are. I don't have to look at just if I get an error. So all shaders, vertex shaders and fragment shaders, they have a main function. It's void, doesn't take any data, doesn't take anything, doesn't receive anything. All of the interaction, like we saw, happens through uniforms and variants and attributes, and then the built-in gl_position for writing the clip coordinate space out of the vertex shader, and GL frag color for writing the color out of the fragment shader. It's got built-in types, right, for float and all that kind of stuff. Vectors and matrices, though, are first class. They're built in. So vec2, vec3, vec4, they're floating point vectors, and then there's also equivalent integer vectors. You can access these however you want. Say you have a vec4. It's a four component floating point vector. You can say it's XYZW. You can say it's RGBA. So it's either position, it's color, or STPQ for texture coordinates. However you want to look at it, you can do that. In fact, you could write like P.XY, and then the very next line you could say like P.RG. You know, it's totally up to you. So the vectors, you can construct them just like you could in C++. So here in the top line, I'm constructing a three-component vector, x, y, z. The next line, where I just pass vec1 to the vec3 constructor, that assigns a 1 to the x, y, and z components. And then, look, you can build these upon themselves. So the final line, first I can construct a vec2 that's 1 and 2. And then I construct a vec3 from that vec2 plus the z value of 3. And this is really flexible. Like, you know, it looks, maybe when you look at it, like, oh, it's not that cool. But then when you start coding with it, you'll see it's really nice. So you can do something called swizzling, which is you can rearrange the order of components. You can access the components of a vector however you want. Right, so here I initialize the vec4 that's C, and I'm going to look at it as if it's colors. The first thing that I'm doing is I'm taking the vec4 and making it a vec3, where I'm saying C.RGB. I'm extracting the RGB components. Now, in the next line, I'm reversing them. I'm axing them as BGR. Right? So now you get the B, G, and R values out in that order. And then look at the final vec3, vec3RRR equals C.RRR. There I'm extracting the red component three times. And then I can write to individual components or to pairs of components. And then finally, I can even access the vectors as if they're arrays, right? Where index 0 is x, 1 is y, 2 is z, 3 is w, and so on. So this is really cool. Yep. No.
And the way that's done when it's executed, is it done in compiler or is it done in hardware?
Yeah. Good question. So this is all done in hardware, and it's, I'll use the term free. I'll say it's very cheap or free. So if you're going to access, like, you know, if you're going to access RGBA, that's like as fast as accessing like RRAA. Like it's very fast. Other questions? Okay, so again, the matrices are built in, and you have matrix 2, 3, and 4. And then there's rectangular matrices, although there's, I'm not sure what version of OpenGL they're in. They're definitely in OpenGL 3. I'm not sure about OpenGL 2, though. I'll have to check that out. And you won't need them for the homework assignments, at least, the rectangular ones. These are stored column major. Remember how we talked about row major versus column major? And that will become useful to us because we can actually access matrices as an array of column vectors. So again, look up top of the constructor. The first line there, I'm constructing a 3x3 identity matrix. So not every element is 1, just along the diagonal, I'm assigning 1s. And then the second line there, where I'm constructing the matrix 2, I'm giving it all the elements. It's rather unfortunate the way that they set this constructor up, because the way the code reads, you actually have to transpose it to get what you actually stored, right? Because you're actually giving it the column major order there, which is a shame because the first column that you're storing is not 1-3, you're storing 1-2. You know, your code makes it look like 1-3. So I don't like this design decision choice, but I assume the people designing GLSO know a lot more than I know and had a good reason to do this. And then, like I say, you can access them with array notation here, column first, then row. Or you can access them like an array of column vectors. So if you look at that bottom line there, we're accessing the second column, and we're pulling out the YZ component. And this is all part of the language, right? This isn't like a library strapped on top of GLSL. However, if you want to do this kind of stuff, or very similar stuff too, in C++, use GLM, which is a great math library that we actually do use in our homework assignments. Okay, so all the vector and matrix stuff, they're easy and they're fast and they're built in. The operators are overloaded. So if you multiply a vector and a matrix and they're all the right size, it does what you expect it to do. Working in JavaScript, I'm going crazy because we have our own vector and matrices types, but I can't overload operators like you can in C++, so it's really annoying. Is there anything here that I really want to point out? No, there's nothing in this code listing that should be non-obvious to you guys, but if you multiply two matrices, you get another matrix. You multiply a vector times a matrix, you'll get another vector and so on. It just works, I would say. And then remember I said there's attribute varying and uniforms, and these are just modifiers that you can put on your inputs and your outputs here. And everyone remembers that uniform is constant across the primitive or across the entire draw call, really. So when you go and do your vertex wave, the time, that will be uniform. Every vertex will get the same time. But the position will be different. Every position in your wave will be different coming in and going out. And then the varying, so here, this vertex shader is just passing the color right through, and that will get interpolated on rasterization. And your vertex wave vertex shader, you're going to figure out color based on the height of that vertex shader, of that vertex, and then you'll output it. Okay, and then you're going to have to read from textures, and you can do this in both vertex shaders and fragment shaders. And when you go to do your globe shader, you're going to have to read from various textures to figure out, am I in the ocean? Am I, what color is the night here? And so on. there's a texture 2D command, and you just give it, if it's a 2D texture, you give it 2D coordinates, typically normalized between 0 and 1. The cloud texture and your globe shading assignment, that has it so that it repeats texture coordinates, which means that if you go like 1.5 or 1.8, you really just read from 0.5 or 0.8. So this way you can just keep incrementing a time and then use that to read from the texture. You don't have to do any a mod. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this is important too. The texture 2D always returns a VEC4. Okay, so it has four component color. But you might have only stored RGB in it, which is pretty common. Or you might have only stored one channel. You might have only stored R. So, for example, the specular map, which is going to tell us what's ocean, what's land, that's only one component. And although we didn't do it in our homework, you may see people slamming multiple textures into one texture, where I might have my day color, RGB, and then my specular map stored as alpha. Right? You totally, people absolutely do things like that. Like I said, the textures, they're usually square, but not always. They're usually powers of 2, but not always. Yeah, so pretty much everything I'm telling you is the common, but not guaranteed. When I say texel, that's one pixel in the texture. So you'll hear someone say texel, just think of it as a pixel or pixel in the image. And when you read the texture, when you do texture 2D, it will do filtering that you set up in using OpenGL. And that you may have just said, okay, it's nearest filtering. So when you give it a texture coordinate, it will just find its nearest texel and read from it. But you may also say, okay, I want linear filtering. So when you give it a texture coordinate, it will read the four surrounding texels, and it will bilinearly interpolate those and then give you that value. And you'll get smoother results than you would with nearest filtering.
Is there just a GL function that you can
set what it does, right? Yeah, so in the C++ code, you can, per texture, you can assign what the filtering states are. Right, exactly. Oh, yeah, totally. So we used to, for example, before CUDA, you might do matrix multiply and store your two matrices in two textures. And, yeah, you absolutely would not want to interpolate those values. I think I have to stop here so you guys have enough time for the student presentations. But we'll continue the GLSL syntax on Wednesday. And I think you guys should have enough to start on the vertex wave part for sure. For your homework, so please do so. Okay.